Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Max Show. I'm Jeff Gamet, your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin, and we're still doing summer fun. And we have Andrew. Is it a go? Okay, to say a blast from the past?
Yeah, I kind of mutter.
We're
A
going
grumble, a
retro.
grumble.
We're going old school. Andrew, you haven't been on any BTN shows for several years. It is so great to see you again. Have you back? How are you doing?
Chin chin, everybody. Very good. Yes, it has, as you correctly identified, been technically a while, which I think probably is 11 years in cat years. So yes, it's technically that does count as a while, for a variety of reasons, but can't keep a good Mac geezer down. So for a variety of reasons, I'm here again.
Well, it's great to have you back. And you being here today means that we have a token Brit on a British tech network show.
Quite right.
Yep. Chuck, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeff, and I think it's only appropriate that we have a token Brit on a British Tech Network show. So, you know, it works. It's overdue.
That's true. It's quite often Americans and Austrians. So, yeah. Anyhow, Marty, how's it going for you?
Yep. Fridays are return email days, so I spend all day composing emails. But it is also James Garner Marathon Day. So on one screen, I'm watching James Garner movies all day long. Just finished Cash McCall, and tonight is Support Your Local Sheriff. So it's going to be a James Garner marathon and emails.
Awesome. When is Victor Victoria hitting your schedule?
It's not on the it's I mean this is a streaming service that
Oh,
kind of
cool.
puts the movies out, and it wasn't it's not on the list for today, so I'll have to pick that up separately.
All right.
Yeah, thank you for that explanation, Marty. I was trying to figure out why you picked James Garner today, if there was any special significance. Couple of days ago, it was, they pick an artist a day generally and focus on it. So, talking about Turner Classic Movies.
Cool.
Cool. Well, speaking of classic, our summer fun topic today, our favorite old school retro first Apple Gear. And I assume, based on the demographic that we have here today, there will be some old Apple devices that show up on the list. So I'll go first. My first Apple product was actually not mine. It belonged to the school, Apple II Plus in one of the computer labs. And then that led to me getting my first own computer, which was an Apple IIe clone, the Franklin Ace 1000. And that was a great computer. My Franklin Ace 1000 is actually in a computer museum now. They were super excited to get that.
Nice.
Wow.
So it's still there. You can go and see it. Do you have visitation rights?
I think I do have visitation rights. I should test that.
Jeff, is it do they keep it running, or is it just behind glass and, you know, preserved?
It was behind glass. I don't even know if it's on display anymore. They got that from me 20 years ago, well, maybe longer.
You should have got some perks like after-hour tours on demand, things
Right.
like that.
Free drinks.
You could have a museum day named after you and the machine.
That'd be great. Everyone show up at the computer museum for Gamut Day.
Jeff, give us some contact
Yeah.
information. We will lobby for you. We'll do a write-in campaign.
I'll have to go look and see if I can find their contact information. It's been so long.
I'm just looking it up. I'd weirdly not heard of it. So I'm looking up the Franklin Ace. I see Apple sued them in 1982, which is always a good look for a company that's relying on selling stuff to be sued by the company that you're copying. I'd kind of assumed when you were saying that they had Apple's permission, but it looks like they didn't.
Oh, they did not. No. The manual that came with the computer, it had fold-out diagrams. It was the entire layout of the circuit board. So if you wanted, you could take the fold-out diagrams in the manual and go buy all the components and solder together your own computer. I did not do that.
I don't think I remember that, Jeff, that you could do that. I just remember them as a complete product.
Well, they were a complete product, but they had the entire design diagram in the back of the manual. I think it was mostly so that if you're out of warranty, something went wrong and you had the skills to be able to figure out what chip died, then you had everything you needed so you could find where the chip is on the board and get the right replacement and solder it in yourself.
Interesting.
So back in that day, obviously the Apple II was a compelling enough machine for Franklin to want in on a bit of the action there.
So the clones, and they followed the old school advice. It's better and easier to ask forgiveness than permission.
Yeah, they didn't get forgiven though, did they?
They did not. They got sued. Part of the problem was their clone was better than what Apple was making and less expensive.
Yeah.
Dave Ginsburg. Dave, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to
Sorry I'm
have you
late.
here. Dave, let me introduce you to Andrew.
How you
Andrew.
doing, Andrew? Nice to meet you.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon. Good morning.
Dave, our topic today, our favorite old school retro Apple gear, our first Apple products, just that whole thing.
Okay.
And I started us with my Franklin Ace 1000 Apple IIe clone.
So, what did you do with it? What was your use case for this beast?
A little bit of everything. I used it for school, and then I used it to learn more about technology in general. Of course, did some gaming, spent a lot of time dialed into different BBS systems.
Oh my God, BBS. Or the internet, as it was used to be known.
Right.
Hear them whispering
When I found the right people on campus that really understood how the at that time the mainframes were set up, they could give me the phone numbers so I could remote dial in to the VAX 11780.
Oh, God.
And yeah, so I was doing my classes remote before that was a thing. Because, I could go to campus some days and be in for the classes, but then for everything else, I would just stay at home, log into the mainframe, do all my stuff. When I needed to print out a report or an essay or whatever, I'd print that out and then drive to school and turn it in. Good times. All right. Someone else, give me some old tech.
I can't be quite as
Go ahead, Andrew.
everyone talks in. I yes, I can't quite beat that for E4 kind of like niche ability. I do remember my first time going to see an Apple product in use, which weirdly was on my dad's desk at work. He was quite a senior manager at Barclays International in London. And for some reason, they decided that they would buy him an Apple II computer. And I remember it sitting on his desk with two floppy drives sitting on the top and a little screen on the top. And it
Fancy.
sat there on his desk for 4 or 5 years. And he didn't turn it on once. He did not like computers.
Oh, that.
Eventually, it got stuck in the bin somewhere. So that was, but it was looked cool. It did look very cool. I was a bit younger there. And then when I was at college, which was in 1984, that was obviously the year that Macintosh was launched. And our typography department got two Macintosh original Macs, which everyone ignored because they sat there with their tiny little 9-inch screens and black and white things, and people were like, "What?" And I was like, "Oh." And I had a look at that, and I remember just being completely amazed that I could type, typefaces, type words in, and then stretch type out. I mean, horrific, just like horrible, horrible stuff. But just being able to click on it and like type, logos in and stretch them out and stuff like that was just so alien to everything we were doing at college at the time with sort of like photo typeset and stuff like that. And then I wrote my dissertation on it, trusted the floppy disk there with my dissertation. So yeah, I kind of had one of those to myself for 2 years, which was interesting. It didn't screw up, it didn't lose my dissertation. There was no panics, it all got done and then printed out. It was like, so I thought, oh, this is like reliable. You can actually do things with this. And then after that, I think for the first time, I actually splashed my own cash on a thing that Apple made was when I was freelancing and I went out and so the first Apple Mac computer that I bought, took home, and was like set up from scratch myself was a Quadra 700.
Oh, nice.
The Jurassic Park computer, as the youth know it now, which it seems to have put a premium on them for some reason. Quadra 700s, when they go on eBay, they're gone. People want them. I guess it's movie stardom. Although, of course, it was also the Independence Day computer. I believe there was a few Quadra 700s in Independence Day.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, so that was the first, that was my first. It's a bit more mainstream. It had 250 megabyte hard drive and 20 megabytes of RAM, which 20 megs of RAM back in those days, that did cost me quite a lot. So that was so I and so obviously I was a freelancer, so I was using that for design and things, and it's not, I can't remember what happened to it. Probably at the end of the day it just got skipped. If I had it now, I would love it because I think for some reason it's sort of like the kind of the minimalist Snow White design language on it. It's just like, it was, for me, it was the peak of that kind of beige box thing. And there didn't seem to be any reasonable reason why Apple could make a basic beige box look so much better than everyone else's beige boxes. But even then they could. So that was it. So there's sort of a variety of products there that I kind of used and experienced, and then my very first one, which I did some actual work with. I mean, it cost a lot of money, but even then it was something that I was using and, billing out to clients with and things. So it was well worth the spend.
Very cool.
I can jump in if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I came late into the game for most. I mean, you guys all know, a few, most of you guys know, but when I was in high school, I would work. The first computer I actually used was an Apple II. And I remember being crazy with my 5 1/4 floppy disks and pirating games and doing all those fun things. And I think I mentioned this game to you before, Rusky Duck. Remember that game,
Oh, yeah.
Jeff? Yeah, that was the one of the games that are very memorable. Remembering all the PR number six is the promote the command to reboot a Mac, an Apple II. But sadly, I drifted away from computers for a few years because I worked in retail. But then had my current job now, and where I got to learning tech, and it was mostly PC stuff at the time. But 2006 was actually 2005 was a banner year for me because the very first app Mac I had was the G4 MacBook. That nice little small one, the 13 inch, that was I bought it used off of a friend, so I got to start learning that. But I never really got into OS 9, so I was kind of towards the end. I was pretty much all in on OS on Mac OS 10. But my actual official MacBook was the white MacBook, the first Intel. That's what really got me into it, was the Intel MacBook, the white one. Everybody loved that white one, right?
It was the bulletproof one.
It was so, and that's what where I got with my very first Mac, and I haven't turned back ever since. And as we all know, I'm full in now. That's what I love. I have more Macs I'll ever know what to do with. As most of us here do. But that's really where I've gone with all old school Macs over the years. But sadly, I miss a lot of that old stuff. So you guys get to talk a lot of the stuff because many of you have been in the Apple world since more or less the beginning. And going up to the Macintosh and all through that stuff. So I didn't get involved with that at all, but sadly. But I like the history and learning about it and hearing about it. But yeah, you can only talk so much about history. I like to stay in the current, and I just continue to buy too many Macs. And currently, I have my current models. I have at least four. So,
I mean, it was a solid the PowerBook G4s. It was a solid, as you said,
PowerBook. That's
bulletproof
right.
machine.
Yes, that was MacBook PowerBook.
PowerBook G. But if you hit it with a Wall Street, it would know it had been hit.
It was toward the end of its life, because I guess that friend of mine that sold it to me at the time, or he may even gave it to me, I don't remember. But yeah, that was pretty quite a workhorse, that little machine. It really was. But the white MacBook, that's when Apple switched to Intel, I think that was really the biggest moment that got me to buy into it. And as I was working right now during those years, I started to teach myself how to use Macs more and more, and then I got to start doing it at work, because at the time my work didn't have we had maybe 10 or 4 10, 10 Macs in the whole environment. So I got kind of slid in and involved with it. So I was learning everything, learning all the old, those wonderful Microsoft applications that we had to use. Was the old Outlook name? I forgot. The crappy
Entourage.
Entourage. Oh my God, that was so.
Entourage. Wow.
Oh my God, that was so bad.
Yeah. There's a company that's not paying attention.
Yeah, well, they are now. But we won't get into that Microsoft, because I know someone here is going to be doesn't want me to talk about that too much here. But And that's one of kind of the unique things of me. I really self-taught a lot of what I know with this, and Apple was a really big part of it. And having all those old getting involved with all the old Macs and starting from, like I said, 2005, 2006, which seems like yesterday, but that's 20 years ago. It's crazy. Well, boy, are we really seen small have seen things evolve as much as it has, really.
Yet we've gone a long way from having our single side, dual density, 5 1/4 inch floppy disks and taking a hole punch and punching a notch onto the other side so we could flip them over and put twice as much on
Yeah.
one disk. Good times.
Absolutely.
Chuck, you've been around for a long time. In
Thank you,
the
Jeff, I
Apple
think.
community.
Yeah, well, I think I got my first Apple II, or my got my Apple II Plus, which was my first one, I think when I was like 6 months old. But I can honestly say I did not have a good reason to get it other than the fact that I wanted it. I wanted to get my hands on a computer. I wanted to see what the whole thing was all about. And even then, one of the things that I think appealed to me most was that it even in those days, it would let me do more than I could do without one, as far as writing things and organizing and I mean, back then, Apple Works was a big thing. So you had a, oh my God, you had a database, which it seems kind of alien today because the whole concept of database programs seems to have been co-opted by other products or dedicated products. But yeah, I got that. I grad, like everybody else did, I graduated through several models of Apple, of the Apple II. Until the Mac came out, but I didn't come to the Mac real early. I think my first Mac was a Mac SE because I had invested not only just money but time in what I could do with the Apple II, and I still wasn't quite completely sold on the whole graphical interface concept. And again, because you have all that legacy knowledge, but once I started to play with the Mac, I kind of got it right away. It just seemed like the thing that held me back, and I really haven't thought about this in a long time. The thing that held me back from making that switch was just some of the software at the time that I needed to run wasn't around on the Mac. Because I was doing some accounting for my dad's shop and using Peachtree for the Apple II Plus, and that just wasn't available yet on the Mac. And so it that may be a lesson, as far as moving to, different platforms or upgrading to different machines, that the software has to be there. The device itself is not enough. In fact, that may be Marty and Eric love to tease me about not buying an Apple Vision Pro yet.
I do
But
too,
that's,
though.
yeah, well, yeah, that's true, Dave. Yeah, you're right in there pitching. But that's, again, I haven't really thought about it in those terms, but that was sort of what held me back then because it was not necessarily as much as I'd love the idea, the productivity part just wasn't there for me. And eventually it caught up and then obviously far exceeded the Apple II Plus. But yeah. And the other thing that might be worth mentioning here is this part of it is that at one point I was the first computer in my office because the company had not deployed other than just, one or two machines in certain very specific functions. And I drug and my SE to the office and got a lot of very strange, concerned looks.
And because of the computer too.
Thank you, Jeff. Yes. Yes. I fed that one to you, didn't I? But yeah,
And
it's always been about what I could do with the machine. And that, and even today, what I can do with the Mac far exceeds what I can do with that other platform. And part of that is obviously just knowledge, acquired knowledge and familiarity. But still, that other platform drives me nuts.
Old Windows.
Your whole thing about the software wasn't there. That's why I didn't get a Mac for a long time. I got an Apple IIgs because it supported all the software that I already had. I could put my CPM card into it, just I took it out of the Franklin, popped it into the 2GS, and I had a computer that would run GS software, Apple II software, and CPM software. And there was no way a Mac could give me even close to what I could do with an Apple IIgs. So it wasn't until Quadro 610. That's when I finally bought a Mac.
The 610.
Yeah, it was the
Oh.
610 with the DOS compatible card in it. And it was cool, but I think I used the DOS part of it like twice just because I could. And yeah, so I should have bought a different Mac than that one, but I like the idea that it was a machine that let me run both platforms.
Yeah, I never got into CPM, so that was not a con an issue for me. But again, it was just the maturity of the software
Yeah.
that, and you think about it, that had to be quite a commitment to for the developers, the independent developers, to make that jump from a what was obviously a successful machine. Now it's equally obvious that it was potentially going to be sort of a dead end from every other perspective. But to jump over to that largely untested machine.
Yeah.
I'm
All
glad they did.
Okay, it's fun sitting around listening to people speak in foreign languages and you don't understand what they're talking about. I am really kind of late to the show on this, but I had some time because I also have really lousy memory, like a netbook. So I have to kind of look up pictures and Google stuff. So thanks for the time allowing me to do this. I started out, I guess, with computers when I convinced my wife I needed to get an Atari 2600 to write my papers for my master's program, and got the printer and the serial port printer and the tape recorder, the cassette tape recorder to store the papers on it, and really used it much more as a productivity machine than I did as a gaming machine. But I convinced Aileen I needed one of those so she wouldn't have to type any more of my papers and I could edit them directly. After that, I went on to my PhD and pretty much stayed straight PC the whole time. Remember buying, then convincing my wife I needed to buy a computer, a PC computer, and remember installing Windows on it for the first time, from taking it from DOS only to Windows, and buying a mouse to get that to go. I finished and wrote my dissertation. I wrote my comps. Chuck talks about going into work and bringing his computer in. I was the first person in the college to want to write my comprehensive exams, which is 2 days of 8 hours a day using a computer, and they could not supply me with one, so I had to bring my own computer in to write comps on it. Again, a PC, but I wrote my comps on it. I wrote my dissertation on a PC, and then took my first job in 1997 in at a university that was very Mac based. Prior to that, where I was working, I had somebody bring in my first kind of connection to Mac at all was somebody brought in a Macintosh Classic 2 to show me and brought it into the office and was like showing me how great a computer it was. And I was like, yeah, it's so tiny and it's so beige. I don't even know if that's beige. It's kind of a creamy color and
Platinum, but it was beige.
platinum. Yeah. And I thought, oh, that's cute, but I just don't get it after running with PCs. So I took my first job, and the first Apple product that I wound up using was a QuickTake 100.
Oh, wow.
That was so cool.
Yes.
And, you know, as I said, I moved to a department that was that the IT, they had one IT instructor. It was a small college, and she was all into Mac. And so I managed to borrow this. Borrow, who's kidding? It's in my basement.
You must have
bar.
an archive in that basement.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The rats are the mice are enjoying it. But it's an Apple QuickTake 100, and I used it to shoot, photos with it. I think I'm looking at an article. I'll share it in the chat, where they talk about if you wanted to do full resolution, you could get up to 8 pictures storage on it. It was remarkably, and then the resolution settings on this were it debuted in 1994, around $800, 750. Specs were 0.3 megapixel or 640 by 480. You could get about 8 photos at full resolution, serial cable transfer to Mac, no LCD panel or anything like that. Jobs kind of refocused Apple on core products, and that's why they dropped that camera. But it was very cool to have that and use it while I was at that university. And apparently they forgot to take inventory on it because I still have it somewhere in my basement. Went to a new university in 2000, pretty much stayed PC, started doing podcasts in 2006, and then thought I need to try and do a what they called enhanced podcasts back then. I don't know if you older podcasters are familiar with it, where you could embed JPEGs into your podcast and it would be sent to devices. Primarily iPods, I think, where you could. And I thought, from an educational standpoint, this is what I want. First of all, I want to be the first in my field to create one, even though I wasn't a heavy Mac user at the time. So someone loaned me in the IT department. Become friends with your IT department. That's Dave knows that. In the IT department. They loaned me a 2006 Apple MacBook laptop, Core 2 Duo.
The one I had.
And I brought it home. And then shortly thereafter, I bought what was the black MacBook that came out.
This one with the
And
white, different color.
yeah,
Oh, the fingerprint magnet.
yeah, the
Yeah.
fingerprint. Yeah, I don't care about it. It looked cool. And it had that glowing apple on the back of it. So,
That's
what
right.
the hell? And the 2006 Core 2 Duo wound up, as most of my tech equipment, got inherited by my preteen son at the time. And he left it on all night or something. I don't know, but it stopped working. It stopped booting and everything. It's still in a cabinet downstairs. So I still have that device somewhere else. The Black Mac, I think I still have because that was before the trade up kind of thing. So those were my original, touchstones into Mac and, fell in love with the operating system, fell in love. I was trying to think the first operating system I probably was Tiger. Was the first OS I probably worked on with the
Yeah.
Core Duo 2 or
Sounds
Core
about
2
right.
Duo. Yeah. So yeah, that's what started me off with it. Of course, the Enhanced podcast never took off, and people wanted to do audio stuff only and didn't want to have to deal with it in other ways. But that's what got me into the Mac.
Nice.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. I'm going to toss out a device that radically changed how I dealt with a lot of my technology. And it was the third gen iPod.
Yeah. I had one.
Yeah, I was, well, I still
I
have one.
still have one. No,
You could probably reach it from where you are. Yeah.
I'm at work, sorry.
Right. So, I was deep into Mac at that point. I even had my own Apple consulting business, and I had been at events where back then Apple consultants would partner with Apple for events. So I had been at a few events where we're showing off like the original iPod, and I was really familiar with it. Didn't want to drop the money on it. Third gen came out. I'm like, I can't not buy this, and it revolutionized how I dealt with music. Like I think the third gen iPod had a bigger influence on just overall on how I dealt with my technology than the iPhone did. And but that's the iPhone would have been that device, except that the iPod, that's what triggered the whole transition for me. I think I'll keep it forever. Still works.
Jeff,
That
I'm
was
gonna.
the
The one with the four buttons along the top, wasn't it? Yeah. So there's like a. I think there was a lot of like Apple were sort of like, how does this interface work? Do we have a click wheel or a scroll wheel? Or we have some buttons. We don't have some buttons. It's like there was a lot of sort of obviously sort of playing around with what did, what made it a usable device. But yeah, I mean, what was that transformative thing? You mentioned it. You said it. What was that transformative experience? What were you doing? Was it just managing music on the device or what?
It was about being able to take massive amounts of information everywhere I went and to have instant access to it. So, I was already carrying around my PIS, I guess it was a Pismo PowerBook. So I had all that stuff and everything. It was all right there. But to actually access it, I'd have to stop, set the laptop on something, lift the lid up. I could work and then close the lid, put the laptop away, and move on. With that iPod, even though it was just music, it was this thing where it was always there. It was always accessible. It didn't matter where I was. It just completely changed my perspective on how I would access information.
Yeah, the iPod was revolutionary for all by itself, and I became obsessed with it pretty quickly. It was quite a device, and I'm so glad I still have at least those in my collection. I even got the first gen with this FireWire connector. It's going to be tough to get that to work much longer here.
I wish they still made them. I really do.
With
Yeah, I'm
the spin
looking at
dial.
refurbished and looking at other things right now, and I just like the idea of that containment. And actually, I kind of screamed, "Why do we want to have it all in one? I want separate things for separate things." And we got the iPhone, and all of that disappeared.
Wow.
Yep, you're right.
Jeff, I'm gonna take yours and twist it, your concept and twist it a little bit,
Okay.
because you got me thinking about, what were some of the one of the big changes that the computer brought for me. And I can't believe I'm gonna say this, But the modem was
Oh.
the thing that really changed
Oh.
things for me.
Yeah, that was huge.
Because you plugged it in and you got into a whole new world of
Did.
information. And look, it's easy to just categorize it and say, like-minded people and all. But local bulletin boards, CompuServe, the source, all those things,
Prodigy.
just
I
Prodigy.
remember that. Oh, I love Prodigy.
And it changed everything. And an old girlfriend, I saw her a number of years later, a lot of years later, and she said, you were online before any of us knew what online was, which I took as quite the compliment, because obviously I was ignoring her. And but it I you know I, I'm sitting here. In fact, I was doing some research while Marty was talking, about the Hayes micro modem. I mean, God, a 300 baud modem is just insane in today's world, but back then, it was the gateway.
Yeah. Mine costs $300. And so my joke was, it cost $1 a baud.
Yep.
Yeah,
I
port.
remember upgrading my hard drive on my first PC from 60 megabytes to, it was 40 megabytes to 120 megabytes, and it cost me $360.
Yep.
And that was back when $360 was a lot.
Yeah.
It still is.
My first actual computer being a PC was a VTech Laser I bought. It was a 480, I think it was a 486. And I upgraded that thing to the tills. It just everything I wanted to tinker with because just didn't have much money back in those days to be buying stuff. But it yeah, that was a workhorse. And I ended up selling that thing and someone bought it off me. I think I must have sold like $200 or $300 or something crazy thing.
Wow.
Someone bought it.
Chuck, your point about having access to the internet and modems. Yeah, I remember I think I had a Delphi account. That was the kind of dial-up account that I could use. And just going on bulletin boards, connecting with people that way. I was kind of in a kooks and spooks kind of phase in my life, looking at all sorts of alternative spiritual stuff and just connecting with people in different ethnic origins and backgrounds and stuff. I just thought it opened up the complete world to me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I was AOL. How could you not say AOL? I mean, that I was on that for a long time. Actually, I met my wife on AOL. So,
Well,
was,
that explains a lot.
yeah, it
Oh,
does.
sorry, Dave. Never mind. That's
But I mean, I was real heavy into modems too, especially US Robotics, which was home base was here in Chicago. So, I knew of them pretty well, and then 3COM, and then having 14.4 or 28.8. 56K and those modems, yeah, they were really good things. And in fact, my first IT job was working for 3COM. It was a contract job for supporting the PCMS MCIA modems, the cards that you
Oh, I
slid
remember
in.
those.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my first IT job. I just everything I did was self-taught, and I didn't do anything other than self-taught myself, learning DOS and learning and the commands. But those PCMCIA cards were those wonderful Win modems. You think you hated Windows? Oh my God! Trying to get that thing to work was a nightmare. So I was supporting those, and it was fun. But it lasted 3 months, and then I ended up getting an actual systems administrator job at a law firm. So I left pretty quickly, but it was fun. It was fun to get in the door like that and get that job pretty quickly. And I progressed. I progressed pretty quickly into my career. So, but yeah, those modems were. Oof, that was a tough thing to support, I tell you.
I remember what now when you were talking about modems and things, it popped into my head. I did earlier. I don't know what happened to my Quadro 700. It hit the bin and things. And I thought, I do remember what happened to it. I remember we stopped using it because we got some 8600s or something like that in the studio. And we had it in the corner and we put two ISDN cards in it. And we had two 128K ISDN lines coming into the studio. And
That's
there's like
crazy.
seven new bus cards. So this Quadro 700 lived for about 4 years with two ISDN cards in it. And it was like, we were like,
ISDN,
this
yeah.
is
That
so quick.
was smoking.
We had, I
Hell.
remember, but yeah, well, we thought it was smoking. And like, when you clicked on the internet, all of the GIFs and things loaded, still in lines, but relatively quickly. But I do
Was
remember
smoking
that we had
fast
a
then.
mass we had a massive brochure that we finished in the studio, and we had put the whole brochure with all of the files, all of the Photoshop files, all of the pictures and things onto a couple of 88 megabyte SyQuest drives.
Oh my.
World's most reliable technology.
Wow.
Couriered them down to London. And when they got there, they were all fine, but one photograph file, one photo file would not open from one of the SyQuest discs for no apparent reason. And we were like, we got ISDN, we got this. And we were like, fired this high-res image down to London, and it took all morning to go. We sat there for the whole morning watching the ISDN blocks flipping across on this thing, trying to get this one. It was like an A4 size high res photo. So it was a chunky image even for the day. So yeah, but it still took most of the morning to transmit this one file.
But you could do it.
We did it, yes. And people were like, I think maybe the other end was. Well, we only had to get it up to the internet, and it was down to them, wasn't it? But yeah, I mean, we did feel that we were pretty cutting edge, that we could, on the one hand, we're still sending SyQuest discs on couriers, but you could see what was going to happen. It was one file, but eventually it was the whole artwork.
Yeah, I remember working in a print shop, and there were couriers that would show up like morning and afternoon, and their job was to drop off SyQuest cartridges from customers and then take SyQuest from us to run them over to whatever service we were using, like if we had to get special film made or something. And yeah, just like twice a day, these couriers are in just for SyQuest. Good
And
times.
nearly half of them worked.
Right? And how about that sound? I mean, once you get the SCSI chain figured out, so it would work.
Oh,
And
God.
you pop that SyQuest in, as it does a
Yep.
spin thing. Good times.
That was a technology that, yeah, I'm not sure you'd survive that kind of level of reliability in the marketplace today, would you? It wouldn't. Just wouldn't
No.
work. And in
Yeah,
fact,
and
when
I
the zip
wonder
disk came
if
out, it was.
suddenly all of the technology in the last 15 or 20 years disappeared and we were thrown back to what we had then, would we all go nuts? Because I can't imagine sitting around waiting for file downloads like I did 20 years ago today. I would choose a different profession or choose a different interest, I think.
But just the fact you would accept the fact that you had come into work and you'd turn everything on,
Right.
and everything on your desk was absolutely the same as you left it, but for some reason known only to the pixies of SCSI, you couldn't see your scanner anymore. And nothing on God's green earth would make that scanner show up until you had systematically taken the entire thing to pieces and rebuilt it with all new SCSI ID numbers on the devices, and then your scanner would appear again for an indeterminate amount of time.
I had one SCSI chain that I inherited, and I was told the CD burner, which cost a fortune, had to be the last device on the chain. Otherwise, nothing would work. And that was great up until it wasn't true anymore. And then it was like, yet yeah, like every few weeks, we had to completely reorder the SCSI chain to figure out where to put that
Oh.
stupid drive so
Oh my
everything would
God.
work
Yeah.
again.
I forgot about the reordering problem. Holy cow.
Yeah. And then finally, literally opening up like the little utility SCSI probe in some kind of like prayer like trance that stuff would appear on it.
Yep. I still have a SCSI Terminator in a box in the closet. I keep it just to remember we finally overcame this.
But it was like acceptable tech. Yeah, it was literally acceptable that this is how stuff was.
But it was amazing when it worked.
It
Revolutionary.
was, but I mean, what was amazing about FireWire was that it actually did work. So
It made me think about obsolete network technologies, the token ring.
Oh.
Remember that? In this building I'm in here, I remember we still had all these token ring connectors that were still being used, and that was probably like in the early 2000s. And I was still learning a lot of that stuff because I hadn't really got into that. But they also used banyan vines as a network protocol.
Wow.
Remember that?
Wow.
I had a crash course in learning because we still had to access that system because they hadn't retired it just yet. So yeah, but I go back a ways there.
I used to, my students used to get so annoyed with me because when I ran the networking module for their BTEC, and we'd be talking about different topologies and things, and there was a big argument. My colleague, who's a very old school thing, he was like, he would go on and on about bus networks and things, and it's like, what was a bus network and what wasn't a bus network and why it was and wasn't, and they were like, oh. But they would casually talk about Ethernet cables and we'd just plug in the Ethernet cable here, and it's like, oh, hold on. It's like, that is not an Ethernet cable. That is a Cat 6 cable that runs the Ethernet protocol. And they look at you blankly and go, what does that matter? And it's like, wait till you're knee deep in network troubleshooting on a big network and it will matter. So,
It will matter.
yes. Just they would like their little. We were trying to get them to produce network diagrams on the computer and things, and trying to explain to them that if you are diagramming out your network, I want to see your gateway and your router and your firewall. I know they're all in one box at home. I want to see them on your diagram, separate devices, because they are separate devices. But this kind of like, this, the having had your US robotics modem sat there, you know what a modem is. You know there's a modem inside your router box. And there's also a firewall, and there's also a gateway, and they're all tucked away in there in individual chips. But like, we know that because we had those devices and we had to plug them all together to make them work. But the students like see this box of magic, even the computing students, and they just go, oh, it's interchangeable. It's just a switch. It's a router. It's like a. It's a hub. It's like, well, is it a hub or is it a switch? And then I look at you blankly and say, okay. Anyway, I don't teach computing anymore. I teach media. So.
Remember the magic you felt when you put those telephone cables together with phone net connectors and connected two machines using Apple Talk. And it's like, oh my God,
Yes.
they can see each other.
Yes. Yes. I remember we ran it manually around our office. We had the little Apple to the local talk connectors on there, and then we just ran the cable around the studio and just kind of left it on the floor and hope we didn't roll our t chairs over it and stuff. But yeah, and it was magic. It was like, I can send you that file.
You could see the printer. You could,
Yes.
don't forget to put the little plug with the transistor into the last local talk connector on the chain. You had to have that terminated.
Oh my God. Yes. Wow. And Marty's sitting there saying, who are these people and what are they talking about?
Marty, you have no idea the
you
cross.
don't.
You're bringing up other memories that I had, sneaking into our business office meeting or office on the weekends so I could wire a network without having to go through the building manager or any of that stuff. It's bringing back some crazy stuff that I did or that was perceived as crazy back in the day.
Oh, good
Yeah,
times.
that no, I was not. No, I'm not going to tell that story because the statute of limitations has probably not run yet. So,
But
but
you know
Marty,
that
you reminded me about doing certain things over the weekend in certain places that probably
right.
would not have approved of them during the week.
Yeah.
Right.
And Chuck, when you said the joy that you have of finally getting it to work, that was the payoff. I mean, you could spend hours getting this stuff set up or waiting for it, but you got the payoff and you felt like you had done something magic that no one else had done before.
That dopamine hit was, that's what you lived
Yeah.
for.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Hey, we're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. But
Wow.
I know we could, I know we could go for a long time with war stories. But I want to let everyone know the links to a lot of the stuff we talked about, it's in our live chat. And the live chat, if you want to get to it, you go to live.britishtechnetwork.com and then you can interact with us with it. Wow, you can interact with us in real time. And like Bob Beach has been in there. Hey, Bob. And just so you know, Bob's first Mac was the
A
plastic
black Mac.
MacBook. Got it in 2006. And like a lot of people switched to the Mac when Apple adopted Intel processors. So, yeah.
That's why they did it.
So here's the thing. If you're watching or listening to the show recording, as opposed to being here live, you can still get to the whole chat thing and see the links. What you do is go to British Tech, oh, God, BritishTechNetwork.com/chat. And you get this calendar, click on the date. Today is Friday, August 8th. You'll see the transcript for or the archive of that live chat. So it's just there for you. Simple as that. All right. So with that, we do need to wrap up. And Andrew, where can people find you?
They can't anymore. I don't do
Yeah,
Twitter because in my absence it turned into a cesspool of well, you know what it turned into. So I don't do that. I don't have much anything to do really. I have a couple of clients from way back that I look after, but they know me, I know them. And I'm safely ensconced at Cirencester College, which I'm more than happy from next year. When we're back after the summer and we've got our podcasting stuff coming up, Jeff, if you're interested, and anyone, we'd love to have people on. We're going to sort out some podcasts there.
cool.
Nothing, you can't find me anymore.
Cool. Well, okay. So the easy way right now is to say we can find you occasionally on the British Tech Network.
I will pop in again. You
Cool.
and,
Great.
scratch my back. I'm definitely back.
Awesome. Glad you're back. All right. Dave, where can people find you?
You good meeting you, Andrew, for sure. Yes, you can find me on my podcast. That's In Touch with iOS, intouchwithios.com. The YouTube channel is youtube.com/intouchwithios. We had a great show last night recorded. It's already published. Go check that out, episode 381. I'm on Mac Voices Live every Tuesday night. And I'm also on the Vision Profiles podcast with Marty and Eric talking about Vision Pro, as well as here most times on Fridays at the Mac on the Mac Show. And then you can find me on social media at Blue Sky and Mastodon at DaveG65. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. Awesome. Glad you're able to show up, even though you couldn't be here right at the beginning.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Marty, where can people find you?
Folks can find me at Gensius, my last name, Gencius, at mastodon.social or at Blue Sky. Most of the project, well, I think all the projects that I do are on the podtalk.net. It's a variety of podcasts that I do. Including, I get to appear on Chuck's show on Tuesday night with Mac Voices, Dave's show on Thursday with In Touch with iOS, and occasionally love to come to the British Net Tech Network because it's a different feel. It's a different process than podcasts that I've been in. The podcast that I'm probably most focused on right now is Vision Profiles, where with Dave and Eric Bolden and Daniel Burkholder, we talk about the latest in AR, VR, and Vision Pro headsets. But again, the rest of the stuff you can find at thepodtalk.net.
Awesome. All right, Chuck, where can people find you?
MacVoices.com is where you'll find everything that I'm doing, all the interesting people I get to talk to or have the privilege of talking to. We do the live show, as was mentioned, Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/MacVoicesTV. And on all the socials, you can find me as at Chuck Joyner. Fun show, Jeff. Fun show.
I have so many stories I could tell. More
Think we
shows.
all.
More
Yeah.
shows. All
I
right.
have to get to my Microsoft Net meeting coming up in a few minutes. Wow.
Awesome. All right. For me, Jay Gammon on all the socials. I'm active mostly on Mastodon, Blue Sky, and Pixel Fed. And then for podcasts, Tuesdays on Chuck's Mac Voices Live, Thursdays on Dave's In Touch with iOS, here on the British Tech Network, Big Show and Mac Show, Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine, and Patrice Brind'Amour and I do Retro Rewatch. And with that, it's time to wrap up. Chuck, did you have something else?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, I know we often talk about the chat and what's there. And so we can see as people log in and log out. And one of the unique things about the way Patrice set this up is that if you log in and you aren't haven't been here before or haven't corrected anything, it assigns you some very strange names. And earlier in the show, I saw that we had Romantic Wozniak as one of the people signed in. And
Wow.
somehow that just seemed very appropriate for the topic today.
It did. All right.
So,
I love it. I miss seeing that one pop in, and that's awesome.
And I couldn't make that up. It really was there. It really was there.
That's awesome. All right. So with that, thank you to all of you for putting a smile on my face. I love starting my Fridays with the Mac Show because I get to hang out with cool people and have great conversations. And you entertain me, so thank you for that. You,
Or is
all
that
of
what
you.
you do after we've gone?
What do I do after you're gone? I just sit here and cry.
Have cool conversations with cool people.
No, you are cool people. But I know now that I've said it, it's going to go to your head. And the monsters I've just created. Oh my God. Anyhow. No, seriously, you're all awesome. Speaking of awesome, everyone that watches, listens live, participates in the chat, you're awesome. Thank you for being here. Everyone that watches or listens to the recordings later, thank you for being a part of this as well. All of you rock. Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for shows. And everyone, don't forget to join us next Thursday for the big show. Come back again on Friday for the Mac Show. And all of you, have an awesome weekend.